Hi, everybody. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Johnny.
God, I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank my friend Frederick for extending the privilege of participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's my opinion, and I hope it always remains such, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit with you good people. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous, just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a room and get sober and stay that way. I'm here to tell you that everything that's good and decent in my life today is a direct result of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. So my life today is a very good one, and it's due probably to the actions that I've taken in Alcoholics Anonymous, even though I didn't even believe in them most of the time. I still don't believe in them most of the time, but I still do them because I haven't got a better idea. I'm extremely pleased to be here today, fully clothed and in my right mind. And the reason I tell you that is the longer I stay sober, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget that a little over 46 years ago today, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God, as He expressed Himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and eat like an animal. If I don't get nothing else out of this deal at all, I guess I can live with that for a long time. It makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here and tell you, without any kind of God whatsoever, that that's where alcohol and drugs took me to. Oh, God, I'd love to be able to tell you that. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to stumble into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. If I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I'm a misfit. I've always been a misfit. I've never seemed to belong where I was at. I was always a little restless, irritable, and discontented. I had a little streak of anger and violence inside of me that I couldn't quite comprehend. I didn't understand then, as I've come to understand now, that those are the symptoms of the most deadly disease that's ever been known to mankind. My sponsor tells me, and I have no reason to doubt him, that there's written history on the disease of alcoholism that stretches back almost 7,000 years. That's amazing to me. I didn't understand that then, and I don't understand that now. I knew a lot about whiskey growing up. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. They made it, they sold it, and they drank it. That's what they did in that order. They were Irish. They had no religion to hold their guilt down, so they just went crazy, them people. I mean, they were crazy people. My uncle drank whiskey and went to penitentiary. My aunts drank whiskey and worked in a poorhouse on the other side of the track. My mother got drunk and beat up my dad. My dad got drunk and beat up my mother. Every once in a while, they both got drunk and beat me up. That's what I said. My reaction to that was, I'm not going to drink. Look what it does to these people. And so I started looking for a way out of this dilemma a long time before I ever got to Alcoholics. I believe, personally, that my entire lifetime was spent on some type of a longing search for something that I seemed to have been born without. I was born with this constant need to find something. I didn't know what it was because I didn't know what was wrong with me. But I knew there was something missing in my life, and I had to find it. Now, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know anything about it. See, it's kind of hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. And I don't know what's wrong with me. I haven't got a clue what's wrong with me. I looked up one day, saw my grandmother. My grandmother lived till she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal that I've been sober almost 45 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. Looked at her and said, you should have had a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time. My grandmother got up every day of her life and went somewhere. I didn't know where she went for a long time. And when she came back, something happened to her. She'd get up on Sunday morning because my uncles and my grandfather used her house for a war zone on Saturday. They'd drink each other's whiskey and steal each other's women. They had a hell of a time, I suppose. I guess whoever survived was the king for the week. I don't know how they worked out their structure. But Grandma used to get up on Sunday morning and step across these people with the best dress she had. She'd be gone for a couple hours. And when she came back, something happened to her. I could see it as clear as I can see you. She danced around these people and cleaned them up and cooked for them and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that and filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. Now, for you who are new at Alcoholics Anonymous today, this is the only place in the world you're ever going to hear about the keen alcoholic mind. You're never going to go to an Al-Anon meeting and hear about the keen alcoholic mind. They don't say things like that. They say things like, the keen alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet. But they don't tell you how smart we are. But I had some kind of an idea because I don't know what's wrong with me. But all I'm going to have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does. I'd be like my grandmother. But I've come to understand I'm not like my grandmother. You see, my grandmother's not alcoholic. She just isn't alcoholic. And you couldn't make her one. My grandmother got everything she needed out of life out of the church that she went to. And so not knowing what was wrong with me and thinking all I got to do is go where Grandma goes and do what Grandma does, I'd be like Grandma. I put my little hand in my grandmother's hand and went over to sit in my grandmother's church with her when I was a child. And I don't know what I expected, but I don't remember anything drastically happening to me. And what I've come to understand, because I've been sober a long time, is that there was nothing in the world wrong with my grandmother's church. There was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it. That's what was wrong with it. Me. I'm doing in that church what I did all my life prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and for a long time after I'm here. I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here. I didn't understand that. That's what I'm doing. I'm looking for something out here to make me feel better here, which only proves to me that the problem has always been there. And what happened to me is that I sit on the back porch of my grandfather's house one day watching my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. And my grandfather left, put it down, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all I did. I just took a drink. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out there in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Now, it's really not a bad reaction. If it had been a bad reaction, I'd have never drank it again. It's a good reaction to the alcohol. That stuff went down inside of me and kind of stilled the madness that was going on in there. It kind of calmed things down. And more important than anything else, it reached up into my head and hit that switch up there. It says, I don't care. I really don't care what's going on around here. And that's it. But that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death. What got me is what happens to alcoholics of my type once I put alcohol into my system. You see, once I put alcohol into my system, then and only then am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. Because what happened to me when I took a drink is what the old Chinese philosopher said a long time ago. I took a drink, the drink took a drink, and then the drink took me. Because my pattern for living, from that moment on until I got to you good people, almost 20 years later, was the same. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, I was pulled out from underneath a bridge, stood in front of a judge, and sent to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just travel around out there. I went from reform school to reform school, to junior penitentiaries, to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut house. It's a little more macho. Oh, come on. If you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had out there. I threw everything into the battle and didn't have an idea what was kicking my tail. I did not know what was doing it because I walked out of institutions from the time I was that high until I was 30 years old on a periodic basis, as physically sober as I am this moment, as physically sober. And not one time did I ever say to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of those electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a drink and go out there and kill your baby brother? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and tear your mother's heart out one more time? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and run those streets, join them gangs, and do what you do out there? Tear people up, rip them alive. Why don't you go out there and do that? Why don't you go out there and get shot and stabbed a couple more times? Just have a drink, no? I never took a drink in my life to get drunk. I never took a drink to go on a party. I never took a drink for any other reason other than the fact why alcoholics of my type take a drink after being sober for a period of time. It's just to go, whew. But you see, that's all it takes. Because once I put alcohol in there, I'm powerless not to take the next one. And if I don't find some way to live, and if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't either, if I don't find some way to live where I don't have to seek that instant relief that comes with taking a few drinks, I'm going to have to drink again because I'm an alcoholic. I have no more choice about that than I do about flying around this room. I just don't understand that. I'm sitting on a furlough from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old. I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine. Most of you probably never heard of Marco Petri red wine. And the reason you never heard of it, because it was experimental stage of the Thunderbird, which is as cheap as it gets in the United States. I started out on cheap wine and worked down. That ain't easy. I'll tell you how bad that stuff was. It never saw a grape. But it'd get you. And I'm drinking this stuff, and I'm sitting on the street corner with my little gang, and we're acting like gangsters and playing like gangsters and behaving like little gangsters and practicing to be professional convicts, I suppose. I don't know, but we're doing it. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, why don't you try these? And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? I just took them. Thank God they weren't X-lax. That's all I can tell you. There's no telling what I could do in some of these meetings. All I can tell you about that is it was like lighting up an afterburner on a rocket ship, because that launched me into another dimension of hell that I didn't even know existed. And it kept driving me down there deeper and deeper and deeper. A couple of years later, I'm sitting on that same street corner on a furlough from another reform school. And I'm eating these pills and I'm drinking this wine. And I might have been smoking a little non-habit forming marijuana for all I know. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm, ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out there in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague. There's a reason for that, you know. I'm selfish, and I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving. I have an ego bigger than this entire room. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I don't understand any of that kind of stuff, but I can tell you at the ripe old age of 25 or 26 years old, whenever it was, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary. And what's significant about that to me today is there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But you know what? They should be gone. And I don't have any right to have any of it back. just because I'm sober. Everything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an unearned gift that has been given to me from this God I discovered sitting with you. I don't understand that, but that's what's stumbling in your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come here to get sober. I was physically sober when I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959, as I am this moment. It's physically sober. I didn't come here at all to get sober. If I'd have known why I was coming, I wouldn't have come. I'm not alcoholic. Nobody ever called me an alcoholic. I've been called a lot of things, but alcoholic wasn't one of them. And if you had to call me an alcoholic, I'd have hit you. Because I'm a gangster of some sort, so I think. I'm a lot of bad things, you know what I mean? But I'm not an alcoholic. I don't even know what one was. Nobody even mentioned it to me. The reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous almost 45 years ago to smell perfume. I did. And I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. It doesn't make any difference why you come. I remember sitting, moving in and sitting down in the back row. I lovingly like to call that my throne of contempt. Had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have probably froze to death, for God's sake. But there I sat, for all intents and purposes, a dead man. And what is really frightening to me sometimes today is, here I am sitting in a room. I'm staring at an answer that I had sold my soul for. I don't recognize the answer because I don't know what the problem is. Over and over and over. If you'd have put a lie detector test on my arm that day and said, are you alcoholic? I'd have said, no, I'm not. The needle wouldn't have moved. So you can't be something if you don't know what something is. Now, just waving your hand and saying you're one doesn't mean that you are one. I didn't know. So I thought, well, I'll sit down and wait for these women to get up and tell their racy stories. Now, when I got here, there weren't very many young, pretty girls like Barbara hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous. If they were, they weren't sending them up that penitentiary where I was at, I'll tell you that. These old gals got up to talk, and one of them said she'd drank for a long time. You could look at her and know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff. See, I knew everything when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true. So there, in all intents and purposes, there I sit, a dead man, and I don't know what's going on. Staring at this answer. I'm fascinated by these people. I can't understand what they're doing. These people get up on Sunday morning. Sunday morning, now, you understand? Sunday morning. They leave their families. They get in their old cars. They buy their own gasoline. They drive 100 miles up those old back roads, and they spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people who don't want to listen to them. People like me who sit in the back row and made fun of them. It took me a long, long time to realize how sick that was. Here I am sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. Something wrong there. I don't know what's going on. But I do know one thing. These people fascinate me. I can't figure them out. I can't understand what they're doing. Why would they do that? There was something about them that attracted me to them, but I didn't know what it was. I've come to understand what it is almost 45 years later. It's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, no matter how dense it happened. It's already happened to me today. I sit right over there in that seat over there, listen to Barbara and Jonas talk. And what they told me in New and Alcoholics Anonymous is very clear today. Alcoholics Anonymous is the language of the heart. The heart talks and the heart listens. That's why alcoholics can help alcoholics. And nobody else has ever been able to help us. I didn't know that. I asked a guy one day, I said, what do you get out of coming up here? Anyhow, I didn't say it like that because I was too cool then. I probably used a few of my four-letter words. I said to him, are you some type of a sicko? You like to look at the animals in the cages. What's your deal, anyhow? He looked at me and gave me one of them deep AA answers that just drive people like me crazy. He said, well, son, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. I pondered that for a month trying to figure out what he was talking about. I know there's got to be more to it, but in a sentence, the man told me about Alcoholics Anonymous. The simplicity of Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes escapes us intellectual giants with brain damage. It just sometimes does. When I can understand why anybody does anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to ask those type of questions. When I can understand why anybody will be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, do anything, general service, central service, meetings, setting up meetings, being on committees, doing things, driving newcomers to meetings, calling on people, making 12. When I can understand that kind of stuff, I don't have to ask that question because I am doing it. I have fallen into the pattern of doing it, so I don't have to ask, what do you get out of it? Because I've done it. And what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, with going to an average of 4 or 5 meetings a week for all these many years, I've learned something that my old sponsor, Norm Alper, used to talk about. He used to talk about crossing over an invisible line from controlled to uncontrolled drinking. I don't have any qualms with that whatsoever. But I'm here to tell you, based on my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is all we have here, there is an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over it, you're going to die drunk. I don't care what anybody tells you. If you don't cross over that line from being a taker to being a giver, you're going to die drunk if you're an alcoholic of my type. And there's a phrase in our book, All Alcoholics Anonymous, that spells out very specifically what that is. The book says that selfishness and self-centeredness, we think, is our problem. And we must be rid of it or it's going to kill us. It doesn't say anything at all about alcohol is our problem. It doesn't say anything at all about drugs being our problem. It says selfishness and self-centeredness is my problem. And if I don't get rid of it, it's going to kill me. Now, I don't understand that sitting in my early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm so selfish. I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to make fun of somebody or to get something. That's my motto when I come here. I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was new, and what you proved to me without a shadow of a doubt was that I was not an alcoholic. And you proved to me by saying things like this. I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore. And everything is just wonderful. Back there in Inventory Point where I sit, my reaction to that was, I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm as physically sober as you are, Buster, and I'm crazy. God, I wish I was alcoholic, I used to say. If I could just be alcoholic, then all I would have to do is not drink, and I'd be okay. But there's something far more wrong with me than that. And I didn't know what it was. My day came in a mysterious way. I got up one morning. I don't remember being any different than any other day that I got up. It was Sunday morning. The people were coming to the meeting from outside. I didn't know that was the day that I was going to go into a room and somebody was going to unlock the gates of hell and let me out of there. Because I didn't even know I was in hell. If I'd have known that when I woke up that morning, you'd have a different talker here tonight because I would have never went to another Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. See, I wasn't familiar with going to alcoholics for answers. I was very adept at going to people who didn't have an answer for me for answers. I've been to the doctors and the psychiatrists and the therapists and the sociologists and the penologists and the lawyers and the teachers and the preachers. And if I'd have known that was my day to be let out of hell, I'd have went to one of them. But see, I wasn't armed with that information. And if you're new, you may not be armed with it either. So I went and sat where I always sit in my back row. I don't remember my attitude being any different. Watched the little man that I knew that did 23 years in a penitentiary, stand at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, tell me something I've never forgotten. It makes more sense to me right now that it made to me then, it'll make more sense to me tomorrow than it is today. He said, very simply, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. You don't have to do it like this no more. Nobody had ever told me that. They'd been telling me since I was that high that I shouldn't drink these things, swallow these things, smoke these things, and shoot these things, but nobody ever told me how to live without doing it. And what none of these great learned people ever seemed to understand, every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. How many times I wanted to scream out at them, good God, doctor, don't you understand? Because they don't. If you're not alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. But if you're not alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. Have you ever watched them or listened to them? Oh, no thanks. I'm starting to feel it. Oh, I have to be home for dinner. I got paid today, you know. The bills are due. Really. I walked up to that little man that night, or that day, and I asked him a very simple question. I didn't know what his answer was going to be, but I asked him this very simple question. I said to him, Les, how do you learn how to live? That's all I wanted to know. I wasn't interested in being sober from that day to this day and living this good life and on a journey into a dimension of living that I couldn't even fantasize in my wildest imagination. I never dreamed anything. What I really wanted more than anything else now that I look back, I just wanted to go to sleep and sleep all night long. I didn't want to wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning in cold sweats with the picture of my mother standing at my baby brother's gravesite while I'm handcuffed between two detectives right across the road from her, and that look in her eye that I knew I put there. That dream was a recurring nightmare with me, and it went on and on and on and on and on. And he looked at me and gave me an answer that I pray God that we give every newcomer who asks us a question in Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't give me any of this psychobabble that you hear about go to 90 meetings, 90 days, and don't drink if your butt falls off. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to be drunk a long, long time before my drunk butt falls off, I can tell you that. I don't like pain. He gave me the answer we should be giving every newcomer. It's one I give every newcomer that I have the opportunity to work with. He said, Johnny, there is a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go get that book, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. Guess he prayed real hard, that little fella. I have been a student of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, from that day to this day. And the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I haven't looked for anything else. See, I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world or cure all society's ills. I'm just looking for a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and you and God. That's it. And you know what? The closer I adhere to the principles that are written in that book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship, just for the sheer joy of doing it, the more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me and the loving God that made me. It's an amazing thing. I didn't open up the book Alcoholics Anonymous to discover I was an alcoholic. I didn't open up the book Alcoholics Anonymous to prove or to stay sober from that day to this day. I opened up the book of Alcoholics Anonymous with a very selfish reason. I was going to prove to you that my case was different, that I wasn't like you. I don't know what I was going to prove, but I was going to prove to you my case was different. And I sat in a room with a man one day, and I'm doing what our program of recovery says is a fifth step. And I heard myself say to that man that I'm an alcoholic. From way down deep inside of me it came. And it was a feeling that came over with me that I carry with me right now. You see, as I stand before you tonight, I know exactly what's wrong with me. Isn't that amazing? I'm an alcoholic and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. I'm not an alcoholic or any other thing. I'm just an alcoholic. See, when I was an alcoholic and something or other, I separated me from you. I'm a little better than you, a little slicker than you, a little richer than you, a little poorer than you, a little smarter, a little dumber, but I'm not like you. When I became just like you, or at least like the people who wrote our book, it became my great privilege to be allowed to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 7,000 years of recorded history. This is the only thing that's ever worked for people like me. And I get to do it. That's what blows my mind. I get to do it. I get to go to meetings. I get to have a job at meetings. I get to make coffee at meetings. I get to set meetings up. I get to clean them up. I get to put new guys in my car and drive them around. I get to call my sponsor up and get chewed out. I get to do a lot of things. I don't have to, I just get to. It's a little play on words, but they're very meaningful. Words are very meaningful to me. I walked out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961. Next Friday at the time, it'll be 43 years. I didn't have a clue what the world was like outside of an institution or outside of a street corner with a gang. I was armed with only one thing. In the 19 months that I was studying our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, in that penitentiary, a dream came to me. And I completed the first 9 steps of my program of recovery to the best of my ability. And that experienced some of the promises. But there was a dream that formed in my head that maybe someday, I never knew when, but maybe someday you good people would allow me to come and sit with you. I never allowed my wildest imagination, you'd let me sit with you. I thought maybe you'd make me sit outside somewhere or in a balcony someplace by myself. Because I didn't think you'd let a thing like me come and sit with you good people and be around your family. But I said to myself, if they will give me the extreme privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. I'm very pleased to be allowed to tell you tonight that next Friday, for 43 years of my life, I have done whatever it is that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. And the reason is very simple. I've been given a great deal here. I have been exposed to and have embraced, through no effort of my own, the whole set of promises that are in our book after the 9th step. I have been allowed to become type of extremely serviceable to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can do things in AA. I can make coffee or set up the meeting. I can go serve on panels at institutions. I can do a lot of things. But I didn't know anything about a fellowship when I walked out of the penitentiary. I knew all about a program of recovery, but I knew nothing about a fellowship. I didn't know how to operate on one, so I went to a meeting one night, and a guy walked up to me and said, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I just looked at him. I said, what's that? He said, well, I'm going to help you get things done that need to be done. I just looked at him. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, why did you ask me? I said, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor. He looked at me and he said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? Then I asked him another question. I'm trying to trick him. I said, then what am I supposed to do? He said, why don't you do what I do? Now, I'm really getting frustrated. I said to him, what is it you do? He says, well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. Gee, I just have cleared up the great mystery of sponsorship to you. You don't ever have to figure out what the fool's doing anymore. Just follow him around if he's staying sober. Do what he does, and you'll be all right. First thing he said, old Norm said to me, get a job and go to work. You're a bum. I said, I'm not a bum. He said, "What are you?" I said, "I'm an AA member." He said, "No, you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. You better get off of welfare, too." I said, "Don't you ever say that to me again, Norm Alpe. I'll hit you. I ain't never been on welfare." He said, "What do you call living in a penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contribution?" Jeez. Then I went to work. Got a job. You know somebody stole my first paycheck? Things are looking good. I'm working. Wife's come back. Got that little girl I'd never seen. You got a job. Got a paycheck. I don't know what to do with a paycheck. What do you do when you get paid? I don't know what to do with it. I never had a paycheck before. I'm a thief. So I went home and told her, "Let's go to the market." She said, "Why do you want to go to the market?" I said, "That's what they do when they get paid." She said, "Who are you talking about?" And I said, "Them. I've watched them, you know." So we went to the market. We put the little girl in a basket and pushed her around there, sitting backwards. I'm feeling good. She's tearing cookie packets open. And I'm playing daddy. I don't know how to be one, but I'm playing like one. Went up to the cash register. They took that money of mine. That really bothered me. I mean, I got to pay for stuff. Then we went home, and I asked her for some money to get a haircut, and somebody had stole her purse. Now, if you want to hear somebody scream, you ought to hear a thief when they get stolen from you. Well, I hollered and ranted and raved. If I'd have caught that guy, you'd have another speaker here tonight. I finally got all through, and I sat down and have a cup of coffee. She said to me, "You all through?" And I said, "Yes, I am." She says, "Now you know how it feels." Huh. Huh. I don't want to know how it feels. I want revenge. You know what? I went back to work that afternoon. I've been working ever since. And life's still pretty good. I'd like to tell you that every meal I've eaten has been a banquet, and every day I've lived out there on the sunny side of the street. No, I live out there in a world where the world is world. You know, my mother, the day I got out of the penitentiary, fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch, said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." I like to tell you, my mother got sober, and my dog got sober, and my cat got sober, and we're the sober sobers, but that's really not my experience. My mother drank herself to death. While I'm sitting safely nestled in your arms in Alcoholics Anonymous, I watched my mother drink herself to death. Powerless to do anything about it at all. Powerless. And the great, it took her 30 years, but she finally made it. And what I learned from my mother's tragedy was very simple. I don't have the power to get anybody sober. I don't have any power to get them drunk either. I don't even have any power to keep me sober. Where would I get it? I didn't come in here blazing with power. I came here with as much power 45 years ago as I have tonight. I'm powerless. My book tells me I'm powerless. And I've come to understand I'm powerless. I'm given some type of a power on a daily basis that allows me to live in a world of love and service. That's it. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw. I knelt at her bedside and held her hand. I watched my mother go wherever they go. You know, there was nothing between my mother and I. There was no bitterness no more. I guess my mother never had forgiven me for my baby brother. I don't know. But there was nothing between me and my mother because of this magnificent program of recovery. And when my mother died, she just died. You know, my wife, the mother of my children, committed suicide right before my 5th AA birthday. I don't know how to handle that. I don't know what brought it about. I was left to raise 2 children, and I don't know anything about 2 little girls. I don't know anything about raising children. I'm a gangster. I hang out in the street corners. I hurt people. So I treated them like drunks. And they turned out pretty good. My youngest daughter just spent a little time studying over at Cambridge University in England. She's 7 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. My oldest daughter, something really wrong with her. She's not alcoholic. She was a registered nurse. I got four grandsons. Number three, just got out of jail. I told my daughter, don't name him Jonathan. But my sponsor, Norm, taught me the business about living in Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't know. He would yell at me and tell me to shut up and sit still. He wouldn't let me get up and wander around. He's just an amazing man. I'd have to ride. He wouldn't let me drive a car because I didn't have a driver's license. When I said, why can't I get a car? He said, Johnny, citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you. I never thought about things like that. And I said, I never got arrested for driving a car without a license. He said, how would you know? You haven't had a driver's license since 1940-something. Been suspended from my natural life. I told him, my driver's license has been suspended for the rest of my natural life. He said, then you won't drive a car for the rest of your natural life. Jeepers. I didn't see anything wrong with driving a car without a driver's license until he told me. He says, if you drive a car and start breaking these rules, Johnny, it won't be long before you're drunk. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. But the time came when I got a job. And I couldn't get to work if I didn't have a car. So I went down and told my parole officer, I gotta have some permit to drive. I gotta get somewhere back and forth to work. You're gonna make me work or send me back to penitentiary. Now I got a job, I can't get there if I don't get a driver's license. So he gave me a permit to drive an automobile. So I called old Norm up. I said to him, Norm, I'm gonna get a car, I've got a permit to drive. He said, do you have money for insurance? I said, no. He said, then you can't get the car. Jeez. The time came when I had the permit to drive and I had money for the insurance. I didn't call him up. I just went out and bought a car. Drove it over his house, drove it up on his front lawn and honked the horn. He came wandering out of there looking at me, looking at that car. And what he said to me is really, really very significant to me today. It didn't make much sense. He said, Johnny, maybe you're just starting to understand that there isn't a damn thing special about you just because you got sober. That you get no special compensation being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You just get to go out there and be of love and be of service because you got a lot of payback to do. An awful lot of payback. You're not starting even with the people who've been doing it for their lifetime. You're coming from behind and you'll always be behind. Maybe you're starting to understand that there ain't a damn thing special about you whatsoever. And he was right. I used to go to meetings with him. I'd sit in meetings, listen to him talk. He's the best talker Alcoholics Anonymous ever had. If you ever get an opportunity to listen to one of Norm Alpe's tapes, listen to it. He's the best talker AA's ever had or ever will have. But I went to a meeting with him one night. And I'm 2 or 3 years sober out of the penitentiary. I'm getting a little frisky now because I'm in the panels and I'm doing things. And I'm staying back by the literature table at the coffee break and some guy walked up and tapped me on the shoulder and said, Johnny, I turned around and I'm looking at him. He said, do you know you're a miracle? I said, really? Really? You know how humble we are. What was it I said that made you think that? He went on about, man, I'm getting higher and higher and my head's getting bigger and bigger. And after the coffee break, I flew in there and sat in my seat and waited for my sponsor to speak. And all the time he's speaking, I'm looking out the window because I'm looking for my spaceship to take me back home. Norm is watching me. I got that glazed over look in my eyes. On the way home, we're driving down the road. Of course, he's driving because I don't have a driver's license. He looked at me and he said, I'm staring out the window. I'm looking for my star. Whatever, I don't know what I'm looking for, but I'm gone. And he said to me, jackass, what's the matter with you? Have you been smoking that stuff? And I said to him, Norm, I don't think you're going to understand this, but I am a miracle. Norm didn't laugh about that. He slammed on the brakes, almost ran into the divider, and screamed at me, "You're what?" I said, "I'm American." He said, "Where do you get this nonsense, Johnny?" I said, "An Amy, from an Amy." He says, "You're not a miracle, jackass. Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle, and you're just a small part of it." Now, I don't know what that does for all the miracles in Stockholm, but I can tell you what it's done for me. It's kept me small enough to stay here. You can't possibly imagine what an egotist like me would do if I thought I was a miracle. It's just amazing. I'd probably be starting up some thing in Waco, make them do it right this time. I have that type of an ego. I know that. That's why after all these years, I still have to have a sponsor who's stronger than my head. I still need to go to 4 or 5 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week. I still need to study our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I still need to do whatever it is that Alcoholics Anonymous asked me to do, whether it's get on an airplane or sweep the floor. I just do whatever it is I'm asked to do around here. And to sum total it, I live a life beyond anybody's wildest imagination. You can't possibly imagine what a good life I live. Do you know what it's like to live all day long with no thought of yourself whatsoever? I do. I know exactly what it's like. I have lived all day long and wanted nothing for myself whatsoever. You know what it's like to love somebody more than you love yourself? Totally unconditionally. I do. I live with a woman like that that I love more than myself. It's amazing what has happened to me. You know what it's like to look at your children and look at one of God's creations and smile at them and realize that you've had nothing to do with it whatsoever except to set an example for them. What a great thing. The book says very simply, we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. That's in the promises. It's an insinuation that you have worked your way through the program of recovery up through and to the 9th step when you comprehend the word serenity and you will know peace. That no matter how far down the road you've gone, you can see where your experience can benefit others. It's a great fact for us. What do we have in Alcoholics Anonymous? I have my experience of staying sober for over 40-some years. I've had my experience of sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous 4 or 5 times a week for all these years. I've had the experience of doing whatever it is that Alcoholics Anonymous or my sponsor has asked me to do. And the sum total of it, I'm about as happy in the world I'm going to get. My life is really very good. Really very good. I just told you a bunch of it. My sponsor, Norm, died the day before my 22nd birthday. Toughest year of my life was when I started running my own life. Thought I had the very best and didn't need help. So one day I sat in Clancy's office and I asked Clancy that. I said, I need a sponsor. I thought he was going to put his glasses down on his nose and say, "What an order, I can't go through with it." But he said to me, "Okay, we'll give it a whirl." I said, "What do you want me to do?" He said, "Well, I want you to come to the Wednesday night meeting and I want you to call me every day." I said, "Okay." 21 years has come and gone. I still go to the Wednesday night meeting every week when I'm in town and I still call him every day. Guy said to me, "You mean to tell me you still call your sponsor every day?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Why?" And I said, "He hasn't told me not to yet." It's basically that simple with me. It's a monkey see, monkey do deal here. It really is. But you got to pick the right monkey. That's the only thing. I mean, you don't want the monkey who don't do nothing, sits around and eats bananas all the time, talks about how bad everything is except for the banana. You want a monkey who's up there climbing a tree picking the bananas, putting some effort into life, doing things about it. If you're new in Alcoholics, find somebody who's sober, who looks like they got some type of joyousness about them, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of recovery, promises people like me, if I will be strenuous in my efforts about this program, I will know a peace and a comprehension of things that I have never dreamed possible. And they're true. Absolutely and totally true. I have a God of my very own. My very own God. Not my grandmother's God who told me God punished little boys who were bad. I have a God who does not favor me over anybody else. What would make anybody possibly think that God would favor us over anybody else? What about the poor guy down the street that can't get sober? What about the poor guy we talked about today, the newcomer, who can't buy this deal 2 or 3 days at a time and gone again? What? God favors me over him? I don't want anything to do with a God like that. When I was new, my old papa, Chuck Chamberlain, used to say to me, son, we're all God's kids. If I am, you are, and if you are, I am. And I said to him, what do God's kids do, Pop? He said, oh, they just wander around and try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. And they do it for free, and they do it for fun. What a tremendous concept for living. I have come to understand in Alcoholics Anonymous that another thing he told me was that nature abhors a vacuum, but God abhors a vacuum even more under heaven and earth. He told me that if I could empty myself of self, I would be automatically full of God. Now, what happens to me when I come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous has already happened to me before I ever came to this podium. I sat right over there in that chair. I saw Frederick open the meeting. I saw Nicholas read the fifth chapter. I saw Patrick, as an afterthought, read the preamble. I don't judge. Heard a man read the 12 traditions. I said, heard Barbara talk. Jonas talk. And you know, even though I'm an American and I don't understand much Swedish, I understood what they were talking about. But while these people were doing this thing, I was more interested in them and their thing than I was in myself. And in those brief moments of my life, I'm about as close to God as I'm ever going to get. I'm never going to be any closer to God than that, because that's what my papa taught. Empty yourself of self. And you can do it by a number of ways in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the whole secret, if I could put another name on the disease of alcoholism, it would be selfishness and self-centeredness. Because I can look back over 43 years of experience of living out there in the world, and every jackpot that I have got myself into, whether it's business failure, whether it's an adulterous affair, no matter what it has been, in all those years that I've been sober, it has to do, I can put it right back to my selfishness and my self-centeredness. It had nothing to do with drinking. It had to do with my selfishness and self-centeredness. And I'm not one of those type of people who say, well, I'm an alcoholic, you know. That's no excuse for bad behavior once you've been to AA. Life is a very good thing. Every living thing I have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Every living thing I may ever hope to have in my life, I will Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you better believe this. This is a long, long walk from a cell and solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA, and good friends like Frederick, I could have missed it all. Thank you very much.